I found Bourne on a sunny gunmetal day, when the giant bear Mord came roving near our home. To me, Bourne was just salvage at first. I didn't know what Bourne would mean to us. I couldn't know that he would change everything. Bourne was not much to look at that first time. Dark purple and about the size of my fist, clinging to Mord's fur like a half-closed stranded sea anemone. I found him only because, beacon-like, he strobed emerald green across the purple every half minute or so. Come close, I could smell the brine rising in a wave, and for a moment, there was no ruined city around me, no search for food and water, no roving gangs and escaped altered creatures of unknown origin or intent, no mutilated burned bodies dangling from broken street lamps. Instead, for a dangerous moment, this thing I'd found was from the tidal pools of my youth, before I'd come to the city. I could smell the pressed flower twist of the salt and feel the wind, knew the chill of the water rippling over my feet, the long hunt for seashells, the gruff sound of my father's voice, the upward lilt of my mother's, the honey warmth of the sand engulfing my feet as I looked toward the horizon and the white sails of ships that told of visitors from beyond our island. If I had ever lived on an island. If that had ever been true. The sun above the carious yellow of one of Mord's eyes. To find Bourne, I had tracked Mord all morning, from the moment he had woken in the shadow of the company building far to the south. The de facto ruler of our city had risen into the sky and come close to where I lay hidden, to slake his thirst by opening his great maw and scraping his muzzle across the polluted riverbed to the north. No one but Mord could drink from that river and live. The company had made him that way. Then he sprang up into the blue again, a murderer, light as a dandelion seed. When he found prey a ways off to the east, under the scowl of rainless clouds, Mord dove from on high and relieved some screaming pieces of meat of their breath, reduced them to a red mist, a roiling wave of the foulest breath imaginable. Sometimes the blood made him sneeze. No one, not even Wick, knew why the company hadn't seen the day coming when Mord would transform from their watchdog to their doom. Why they hadn't tried to destroy Mord while they still held that power. Now it was too late. For not only had Mord become a behemoth, but by some magic of engineering extorted from the company, he had learned to levitate, to fly. By the time I had reached Mord's resting place, he shuddered in earthquake-like belches of uneasy sleep, his nearest haunch rising high above me. Even on his side, Mord rose three stories. He was drowsy from sated bloodlust. His thoughtless sprawl had leveled a building, and pieces of soft brick rubble had mashed out to the sides, repurposed as Mord's bed in slumber.